This episode of the WWIA podcast is proudly sponsored by Cabco Builders, a company built on integrity, craftsmanship, and a deep commitment to those who have served. Cabco is honored to support the mission of Wounded Warriors in Action, bringing healing and connection to our combat wounded heroes. We salute our veterans and believe in building more than homes. We're building stronger communities together. Thank you, Cabco Builders, for standing with our heroes. Hello, and welcome to the WWIA podcast. We're honored to have you join us in our mission to bring honor, connection, and healing to America's combat wounded Purple Heart heroes. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, we welcome you. If you're a returning listener, thanks for coming back. Please be sure to tell others about our podcast and leave us a review if you're enjoying what you're hearing. Our mission is made possible because of the tremendous generosity and support of patriotic people and businesses across North America. On this episode of the WWIA podcast, WWIA founder and CEO John McDaniel welcomes one of these American patriots and an outstanding supporter and friend of the foundation, Mr. Kyle Bennett, to the show. Kyle is the general manager at Cabco Builders Incorporated, which designs and constructs high-quality manufactured homes and employs 225 people in beautiful Boaz, Alabama. In 2018, Kyle became the youngest general manager of a production plant in the manufactured housing industry at just 35 years of age. He and his wife of 18 years, Lacey, share three incredible children together, ages 17, 14, and 12. Kyle's also a proud alumnus of the University of Alabama, where he played football for the Crimson Tide from 2002 to 2005 and graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Political Science. This is a great episode that we're excited to share with you, so let's go ahead and join the conversation with John and Kyle right now.
Hi, I'm John McDaniel, founder and CEO of the Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation, and this is our podcast, Honor, Connect, Heal. So I have with me today another very special guest, and this gentleman is an amazing philanthropist. He was a former linebacker on the, believe it or not, the University of Alabama Roll Tide. He's a very interesting man, one of the youngest general managers in the production plant for manufactured housing at the ripe old age of 35 back in 18. Just a great American, and it's a pleasure to welcome to the program Kyle Bennett. Welcome.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And you're a Now, why do I have you on this program? I have you on this program. I'm just going to say it because you and your family and your company, Cabco, which builds, manufactured homes, built a home, a beautiful custom-made ADA compliant, American Disabilities Act compliant home in Boaz, Alabama at your factory. And then it was shipped up to northern Wisconsin, and it's sitting there on Campac, it fully installed, and is being utilized as we speak by our combat wounded Purple Heart veterans, and it changed our life up there, buddy. And you did that. You and your family did that. Thank you.
Hey, man. Basically, when they come to us, we're going to, about doing it and Campac it, and it was a no-brainer. We can house them. I was telling Matt, he was just talking about different stuff. And I know you're going to get into Matt Brandon in a minute. But
yeah,
that was a no-brainer. He didn't quite tell me he was going to Wisconsin until kind of the very end. But anyway, we figured out the logistics. And, man, we was honored to be able to do that.
Really, I'll tell you how it went on from my side of the fence. How this whole thing unfolded. There was no more room in the bunkhouse. The bunkhouse was completely full of heroes, and there was no place for me to even sleep. And I had this old 40-foot fifth wheeler that the animals had taken over. I brought it up there. No, seriously, man, I had squirrels living in my mattress, and you know, I don't want to even tell you what else was going on up there, but that's where I was staying, and then I it became uninhabitable. So I ended up getting a small used Airstream trailer, and I was taking that up there. So at least I wasn't sharing my space with animals. And it's true. And so Matt was up there at a guide at our guide school program, and he looks at me, he looks at the bunkhouse, he looks at the Airstream, he says, "You bringing that up here every time from Florida?" And I go, "Mm-hmm." He goes, He goes, "What do you think? What do you think about me?" Because I'd already met you at a fundraiser at Matt's Matt's holds a fundraiser for his event in Boaz, his turkey hunting event. And he says, "What do you think about?" And I'd met you at that fundraiser. I didn't understand like full force Kyle Bennett, and I didn't understand Cabco at that point. We just shared a table, and I knew you were his friend, right? So we were just, you know, having a good old time. But he says to me, "What do you think about me calling Kyle and seeing if he'll build you a home?" And I kind of thought he was kidding, and I said, "Fill your boots, man." Like, right? Like, so he drifts off into the wood line so he can get reception up there with his cell phone. He comes back 5 minutes later and he goes, "He said yes." That's how it happened, man. And I was like, I didn't say I doubted it, okay? But I thought, well, you know, we'll see. You know, I mean, that's, I mean, I didn't doubt that it would happen. I just was like surprised. I knew if you said it was going to happen, it would happen. But I was like, I was floored. Like, Matt's not going to come up to me and say, "Yeah, Kyle said yes," if it wasn't true. So I was like flabbergasted. But literally then that rest of that summer, I had to get, I rented in my life did I ever drive a digger, you know, front end, you know, one of those diggers, you know, those excavators, I guess you call them. I had to go get an excavator. I did, man. And I lied. I said, "Oh, I'm going to get myself in trouble," but I lied to them. They said, "You have any experience running this thing?" "Oh yeah."
Absolutely.
I say, absolutely. I drive all the time, man. I grew up on one.
Vixen, I have experience.
That's right. Vixen, they have experience. And then I showed up with a truck that was a quarter ton, and the dude goes, "Nope." He goes, you're not pulling it with that. I said, "Come on, man, this thing can do it." He's, "That's, you gotta have a 250 or better. You got full size. It's a real digger, man." Anyway, amazing that you guys did that, and I want to thank you from, you know, the bottom of my heart. I was kind of planning on saving that towards the, you know, the end there, middle part, but let's backtrack and talk about Mr. Matt Brannon, if you don't mind. You guys are friends. You went to high school together.
Oh yes, sir. We you know, he was a freshman when I was a senior, so you know, football. That's where we got to. He was a football, baseball player. I was too, and you know, he was a young buck, kind of coming up in there. Then he got thrown into the fire a little bit and had to. I played running back in high school. Well, he had fullback got hurt, so he had to come block for me. So we had us a lot of come to Jesus meetings out on the football field with him being 14, 15 years old and me being 18 and him not blocking the right guy or getting the block, man. So he was tough. I mean, Matt, that's probably what drew me to him when we got such a good friendship. He was very tough and like a little brother, you know, I had to kind of teach him a lot. Sure. And then, you know, Matt's always been a, you know, a great dude. Anybody's ever met Matt Brannon, they can't say nothing negative about it. That's what, you know, he's just a great individual, great person, and better than that, he's a great friend. I could call him up. You know, he's that kind you call up and say, "Look, hey, we're about to go do some stuff. I need you." He's going to ask you whose car we drive. You know, he's that kind of guy. So when he needs something, I'm there. When I need something, he's there. So, and that's just kind of blossomed from there.
Well, and for those of you that don't know Matt, you know, Matt's a combat wounded veteran, and that's how I met him. He's a Purple Heart recipient, and I got word through the grapevine several years ago. And I would Matt would know that I'm sure that the year, but I don't, because they all kind of bleed together. I would have to say it was 5 or 6 years ago that I first met him, I reckon, maybe even longer. And I'm sorry, Matt, that I don't recall the actual date, but I was told, you got to meet this guy. And it was, I think Jake Wibke told me that. And so we did get to meet, and Matt started to, you know, do his own event. Now here's a combat wounded veteran that's, you know, running his own event in Boaz, a couple of events actually in Boaz, Alabama, that are highly successful. So he's serving wounded veterans in his camp, your camp, and also running around as a trained and certified guide through our program, leading events and activities all across the country, and then gets us connected to you, and then, you know, gets the Cabco house built and then shipped up to Wisconsin. I mean, it's all been a game changer for us. And I really wanted to have you on the program because you guys, and you know, you're just amazing people for starters, but, you know, you also invited me to a Wisconsin, because I'm a Wisconsin guy, you know, a Badger, went to University of Wisconsin, and Wisconsin played Alabama in Tuscaloosa. And I'd never been to Tuscaloosa, and I'd always been a closet Bama fan. I'm going to say it, okay, because I go back to the days of Bear Bryant. I go back to the days of Nick Saban, which was not that long ago. And I just always admired, you know, Alabama for what the football team that it was, the coaches that it had, the winning tradition that it had. And I'd never even been there, never thought I'd get the chance to go, you know, actually to Tuscaloosa, and much less, you know, look at the stadium, but be inside of it. Like, if you don't have tickets, I don't know how you'd get into that. You can't get in without a ticket, but I don't know how you'd even get a ticket. Right. You're snickering about it, but I had no idea. And then the next thing you know, you're inviting me, Wisconsin's playing. This was this year. This was last month. You invited me to the Wisconsin football game. Matt was there, and I showed up, and I remember, you know, you got a beautiful, you know, condo, not far from, you know, from the stadium. You can see it from your place. And there I am looking at that thing, and I thought, geez, this looks like the Coliseum, man. Yeah. And I got inside, and I'm like, holy cow. I thought, you know, Wisconsin has a beautiful football stadium, but I'm telling you, I mean, you guys have taken that thing to an absolute extreme. You eat, sleep, and drink football.
Yeah, it helps when you win. It helps having Paul Bear Bryant, yeah, and Coach Nick Saban there. It does help. It does help get that money to build the cathedral. That's what we call Bryant Denny Saban.
You do it. You call it a cathedral.
Uh huh. Yeah, that's the cathedral.
It is. I asked jokingly. I said, "When are they?" I was sitting up there in the, you know, in your space, sharing it with you and your family and friends, and I always just felt really, you know, obviously very honored, because it's a family affair and a friendship affair and all of this, and to be invited into that group was a very special day for me. But I jokingly said, I just, you know, is it at halftime when they start feeding the Christians to the lions here? I mean, are they gonna have a gladiator event? What's going on here, man? I mean, it's serious. And you know what else I didn't say? I'm doing all the talking. I'm sorry. I get excited, man. But the other thing I noted was, you know, your band is amazing. Like, your band, it takes a whole section. Like, you've got a whole section for the band. When that band gets on the field, there's like standing room only. It's the biggest band I've ever seen.
Well, the band's got to be good too now.
No, they are.
Yeah, I know.
They are. They're great.
When you perform in Bryant Denny, it's got to be, you're going to be good, and they are. They're a well-renowned band. So it is a people don't understand it. I guess it's a, I won't call it entertainment, but it is a, you know, it's something you go to. It's not just a football game. It's a lifestyle. It's an experience. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
it is.
And that's what's so great about bringing people to the game. Like, I love to bring people's first time to it. Like, I love just sitting there watching your face like, uh-oh, you know, what is this? You know, and then there's going to be a football game played down here too. We got some big old jokers. And, of course, Wisconsin did too. Of course, after the Florida State game to start the year, I thought about uninviting you, because if y'all had to come down there and beat us now. But they turned it around. So we're good now.
And 2 days ago on Saturday, you guys had, and I will never forget this, I was asking you when we were, you know, before the game, I was saying, well, so like, or maybe it was after, I can't remember, but, you know, who are your biggest rivalries? I mean, you're Alabama. Well, and you just said, you know, you said, well, Tennessee, and you said a few things that probably shouldn't say on air. And I'm like, I sensed there's a real, like a, you know, like a real rivalry there that's deeply seated, and there might be some anger and some angst and some other really competitive, wonderful things happening underneath the surface there. And you got to go, well, why is that? Well, you and I were in the pre-show, you were talking about that, but you said Tennessee, you know, Tennessee, holy smokes. Well, you just handed them their hat, you know, Saturday. I want to say it wasn't a competition, but I thought the team performed superbly well.
Yeah, it's always good. You know, that's the cigar game. So you got your cigars. Matter of fact, Matt, who we're talking about, Matt Brandon, he was there with me probably 8 years ago. My little son, Bo, he was 6 years old, and he sent me a picture after the game and goes, smoke them if you got them. There's my 6 year old with a cigar in his mouth after the Tennessee game 6 years ago, and we beat them with it lit, you know, grinning, you know. And I was like, man, don't show that to nobody now.
Right.
That's how deep we hate them now. We put it in there for the picture and took it out, but that's just, you know, it's a tradition. I mean, you know, we didn't like them when I was down there. We still don't like them. You know, Auburn fans, we got to tolerate them. We live with them. Tennessee fans, we don't. So when we cross over that border state is when it gets real. You know, we don't like orange and they don't like red. So it's a lot of fun, though.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man. I appreciate you inviting me to that game. It was I was left with an impression that I'll, you know, I think I wanted to mention for my Wisconsin fans, I was wearing a Wisconsin Badger t-shirt at the game, okay? But I did buy a Bama hat, which I wear all the time. Okay. Now I'm a Bama fan too now, but I put my Bama hat, I had my Bama hat on and my Wisconsin t-shirt on, and guys came up to me, a lot of Wisconsin dudes, and they're like looking at me strange, like they couldn't figure it out. And they said, what, you just must be really conflicted. I said, I am really very conflicted.
Yeah, but I'm outnumbered by about 100,000.
Oh, so yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But it was a lot of fun. And you played football for Alabama. You were a running back in high school, as I was. But I was more of a fullback. I was the Matt Brandon. I was blocking for a guy by the name of Curtis, who was a tremendous tailback. I don't know. He had 1,200 yards that our senior year or something. He was a tremendous running back. That I understand what Kyle had to or what Matt had to do for you, which is, you know, be your fullback and blocker. But you were a running back, and then you ended up going to be when you played for Alabama, that you turned into a linebacker. How'd that happen?
Well, I mean, I was a linebacker in high school too. That was back in the good old days when you went both ways. These kids can't do it no more like we could. You know,
I did it. I did it.
I didn't have a choice.
That's right. I didn't have a choice. I was also the kicker. I think I was the only one. The only team I wasn't on, I think, was punt return.
Yeah.
Other than that, I was on the field, I think.
Hey, if you get tired, pat your helmet. Well, I'll be over there patting my helmet. The coaches looked the other way. So I was that's a lie. You know, so.
Yeah.
But no, I actually went down there. And the funny thing is, I went down there as a linebacker. And then my sophomore year, we was right in the middle of training camp, right in the middle of a practice. This is a funny story. We're sitting in the indoor. You got to take a break in the indoor, and it was time for break. And I'm sitting there, and we drink Gatorade. You know, we're chilling, waiting on the next period to start. And all of a sudden, here comes the head coach, the running backs coach, and my defense coordinator, who was our linebackers coach, Joe Kines. And they come walking up, an equipment man. Here they come. He's got a jersey in his hand. It's a different kind of jersey than I had on. And they told me right then and there that mid-practice I was moving to fullback. And, of course, I was trying to buck it a little bit. So I was like, hey, I'm doing pretty good. Linebacker, hey, our fullback just got hurt the day before. And we needed depth. And I was actually behind a guy named D'Amico Rines playing linebacker. If y'all don't know D'Amico Rines, he's now the head coach of the Houston Texans.
Okay.
Well, I wasn't fixing to beat out D'Amico Ryan. So now the whole moving to fullback thing was actually pretty, you know, I was thinking about it in that short little time span. And I told him, I said, well, I thought I was doing pretty good at linebacker. About that time, Joe Kynes, he's hilarious. Love that man to death. And he got that little scruffy voice. Brent, you want to play down here? Yes, sir. That's the whole point. He goes, well, you're moving on, Fish. You're too slow playing linebacker in the SEC. And he just turns around and walks off. The head coach says, hey, this is Coach Woods. This is your running backs coach. You know, y'all know each other a little bit, but hey, you're spending a lot of time with him. He walks off. The equipment manager throws him a jersey, says, give me the other one. And me and Coach Sparky Woods better become best friends because I had to get there early and stay late to learn offense really quick. And but it was good. And even though Joe Kynes said, Coach Kynes said it, he was right. I was too slow to play linebacker in the SEC. So moving to fullback was good. I got to earn 2 varsity letters my last 2 years, start on all the special teams, and I backed up a guy named Ron McClain, who ended up going getting drafted by the Baltimore Ravens and made the Pro Bowl 2 years. So it was a good experience. You know, it was great. You know, met a ton of memories, ton of friends, ton of connections. You know, you live in this state, you go play football for Alabama, it carries a little bit of weight. So, we were pre-Saban now. I mean, we're the reason why Coach Saban's here. You know, we had a few struggling years. My senior year, we were really good. Went 10-2, won the Cotton Bowl. But after that, it kind of went downhill. And 2 years later, you know, Coach Saban came, and it's been real good to be a Bama fan in the last 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I appreciate you sharing that with me. That's that's cool. I didn't know that. And you and I chatted a little bit when we were together in Alabama about playing football. And I remember you saying you were a running back and a linebacker in high school. But I never did get the chance to talk too much to you about, you know, your time in Alabama, you know, with the Crimson Tide and what, you know, position you played. I assumed that you were a linebacker, and of course you started there, but then, you know, transitioned to becoming a running back again. That's pretty cool. Yeah. That's awesome. So let's switch gears here and talk a little bit about Cabco. 'Cause I'd love for you to share, you know, a little bit or as much as you want, about Cabco, the company, Cabco Builders. Tell us about Cabco, Kyle.
Yeah, Cabco Builders was my dad. He started it in 2003 right here in Boaz, Alabama. He's I'm actually a third generation manufactured housing owner, I guess you'd say. Okay. My granddad, he was in the business in the 60s. It's called River Oaks. And then my dad worked for him, and my granddad sold out. My dad went and started a company called Homes of Legend right here in Boaz, Alabama. And they built that up. They sold it out. And he was too young to really retire. He signed a non-compete for 3 years. And actually, when I was at Alabama, he bought a motorhome. Mm-hmm. And away games, home games, didn't matter. Thursdays, he was rolling in. That was kind of his thing for about 3 years there. And anyway, he got, you know, he was bored. He was too young to not work. And so he started Cabco Builders. It's started in 2003. We had 20 employees when it first started, and just kind of built it up. Now we're, like I said, we're on our 22nd year, and we got 225 employees now. We build 6 floors a day, which means we build 3 complete double wides a day. You know, 27 stations. It is a production line, and wow. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, let me tell you that it's we have a lot of fun doing it, but it's very challenging. You know, the economy. You know, the economy's up, it's good. Economy's down, you struggle a little bit, just like everybody else. You know, you got 225 people depending on you to run this thing every day, and you know, we feed a lot of families. I tell people all the time, when I make a decision here, it ain't about me, it ain't about you. It's about 225 people out there and their families. So when we make a decision with Cabco Builders, it's for 225 families. You'll times that by 4. You know, that's what that's how we make decisions, how I make decisions, how I've always done it. And you know, it's been good. It's been good with my family. We're an independent, we're one of the few independent manufacturers left in the industry. We are actually the number one independent manufacturer in the state of Alabama. We build more for than anybody. So it's been good. It's been good to my family. Business has been good. It's been good to a lot of families around here. even when we go out, you know, go eat lunch, you know, we see these old timers and they'll stop me and say, hey, I worked in a mobile home plant back in so-and-so for your granddaddy. Hey, I worked for your daddy, you know, this and that. Of course, they've went on to own their own construction businesses or electrical businesses or plumbing businesses. And it's a good place to come work, make some money, learn a trade. And hey, if you want to go out on your own, start your own stuff, I'll be the first one to pat you on the back. Hey, I'm here if you need me. And, you know, that's kind of how we do it. And that's, you know, we're looking for good young labor. That's what we try to do now. Mm-hmm. It's harder, obviously, this technology. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to get into this technology stuff. But, you know, we're in these high schools. I'm trying to get into high schools. I'm trying to get to these tech schools again and be like, hey, you can make a good, great living coming to work with your hands and building somebody a house. And, you know, and that's mm-hmm. what it is. We're building people's houses. You know, we're building houses for people that work their butt off just like we do it. You know, just to, you know, have their own land, have their own home. And we take a lot of pride in doing that. You know, a lot of our business, a lot of our customers are first time home buyers. You know, got young families, they're working their butts off. They've got, you know, a wife, two young kids, whatever it is, you know, and they want to own their own place. You know, they tired of renting and, you know, site built housing is a little bit too high, you know, for them, and they're blue collar people, and that's our customer base. So take a lot of pride in building their house, you know. So,
and that's how many of your homes that you guys build are going? You say that's your number one customer base. I'm assuming that the majority of the homes that you guys are building are staying in Alabama. Is that true?
No, sir. Now Alabama is a great state for us, but we got 76 dealerships that we sell to. So we're a wholesale manufacturer. So we've got, you know, dealerships all the way out to Oklahoma City, East Texas, you know, Waco, Texas. That's about as far west as we go. And then all the way up, you know, Arkansas, Missouri, Kentucky, of course, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia, both Carolinas, and the Panhandle, Florida. So we service about seven states, and we got 74 locations that we sell. And so it's a pretty big ordeal.
Let me ask you this now. Bear with me in my ignorance here, but you know your brand, okay, your Cabco brand. You know, when you send a house off or houses off to just, let's just say Oklahoma for argument's sake, or any place, it doesn't matter. And that house, somebody, a dealer bought that house from you to sell it to somebody else, right? I'm assuming that's what's going to happen.
Yes.
It might already be sold. But it shows up and you know, maybe they tour it and they look at it and they go, yeah, this is great. And they say yes and they buy the house. But your brand, you know, because when you go buy a car, right? I mean, hey, that car was manufactured in, say, I don't know, let's just say it was Detroit, you know, and make a lot of cars in Detroit, you know, and let's just say that it's I don't know, it's a Ford or something like this. And you know, it gets shipped down to Florida and, you know, I buy it. Well, it's still got Ford's brand on it. I know I'm buying a Ford or in this case, a GMC. That's what I'm driving now. So I would buy a GMC. And mine was made in Canada. It doesn't matter where it's made. It's got the brand on it. It's GMC. But how about you and your house? I mean, do they know this is a Cabco house, or is it just to them, it's just a house? I would be looking, if it were me, I would be, hey, I fancy myself a business person. You know, I come from a family of business people. And so I would be thinking to myself, how do I reinforce my brand? People go, I want a Cabco house. I mean, how is it even evident? Do they know it's a Cabco house? How do they know?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, yeah, I think now, you know, online and we do a pretty good job marketing, you know, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. Mm-hmm. But,
all that,
you know, people can get on the internet now and they are going to research, you know. And that's, it's funny you keep saying the brand, you know. Pat McAfee, you ever listen to Pat McAfee? Pat McAfee on College Game Day? You ever heard of him?
No.
Okay, his big thing back in the day was for the brand. You know, he's always talking about for the brand. You know, and I've kind of took that and run with it. Like, you know, my guys here in the production line, you know, all my employees know that, hey, it's for the brand. When that Cabco is stamped on that plastic, which is, you know, we wrap our houses in plastic, ship them down the road, and it's got the Cabco builders, the Cabco logo.
Perfect.
You know, this is for the brand. And, you know, so when they get this Cavco house, it's going to be built with quality. It's going to be built with care, and we're going to care about it, you know. And then after the sale, you know, we're a little different. You know, manufactured homes has got to roll down the road. So then they got to come, they got to get set, they got to have the tires and axles taken off, they got to get put together, it's got to be anchored, tie down systems, you know, racked here and there, trimmed out. Well, there's going to be some service involved in that. You know, there's going to be some doors that needs adjusting. There's going to be some cabinets that, you know, crown molding might have popped loose, or, you know, just some stuff. So we do have 10 service techs. We got 10 service trucks that stay on the road full time to go around and service our houses. So they got the Cavco, you know, the Cavco wrap on their trucks. You know, they're going to show up with their Cavco t-shirt on, their Cavco hat, and go get in there and fix what needs to be fixed. So it's that is very important. The brand, you know, always protect the brand. And then whether you're the service tech, sometimes that's the only people that they're going to see from Cavco. You know, so, you know, you got to have your talks with them about, hey, being professional, getting our house, you know, taking care of anything they need. But so being an independent as we are, you know, we're not, you know, we're not a big city, you know, we're not owned by Warren Buffett, you know, Clayton Homes is probably the biggest manufacturer in the United States. It is the biggest manufacturer in the United States. They're owned by Warren Buffett. So I'm competing against Warren Buffett, you know, one of the greatest, you know, investors or whatever it is out there. So, you know, to be an independent in this industry, you got to protect the brand. And that's what we're going to do. You know, we're going to build your house with quality. We're going to build it with care. We're going to take care of you after the sale. And, you know, it's a family run business, and we do business with family run business. In other words, our dealerships that we sell to are independents. You know, they're family run. So you get a lot more stuff done when you make one phone call here to Cavco Builders and talk to Kyle Bennett and make something happen than it is just keep shooting it up the ladder, because I am at the top of the ladder. You know, and corporate's a little different. You know, they got to have permission to do stuff. I really don't, you know, so.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great thing about being an independent manufacturer in this industry that we're in today is, you know, we can do things and that we wanted it.
Right. You know, it's you said something that it's going to stick with me for a long time. As a matter of fact, I've never heard anybody say it, you know, like this. And it might be because I was thinking, you know, how come I've never heard that or never heard anybody say that or never thought of that myself? And I think it might be because of, you know, my former line of work in the Army for 20 years. And when we made decisions as leaders in the Army, we weren't making decisions necessarily for the entire platoon, right? And their family. It was because we have a job that has to happen, and we know that it's dangerous, and we know that, you know, this is just, this has got to happen, and we're going to do our best to make sure that nobody gets hurt and nobody gets killed and all of this. But, you know, you said that, you know, when you make a decision, you're making that decision for 225, you know, people and 225, you know, families, right? And that really, that gives you a sense of how weighty some of the decisions, you know, are. But is it in the best interest of the entire organization and the people that work for it? And I got to tell you, I'm going to use that. And I think it's brilliant. And I think it's great. And that is a really unique way of looking at making decisions as a leader. And you know, especially, you know, in the commercial sector. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. I'm sure that's going to resonate with a lot of people, as it certainly did with me. And I was going to talk about leadership with you, but you stole the show on that one. I mean, I think that right there is something that that's got legs, man. And there's a lot of weight to that. And I appreciate you sharing that philosophy with us, because I think that's something that's going to, you know, resonate with a lot of people. I know it certainly, you know, has with me. So thanks for sharing that wisdom with us. Pretty, pretty neat. I want to switch gears on you here a little bit. And I'd like to, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, family. You mentioned in the pre-show, we were talking about family. I met Bo, who's 14. That's your son, who I can tell you right now, starting out with that cat, you know, they say that the tree doesn't, you know, grow too far, or the apple doesn't grow too far from the tree there. You know, I mean, that he's 14. So I've got an 11-year-old. I imagine he's a freshman. Is that right?
Yes, he's freshman.
He's a freshman in high school. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, I can go back to my time. I remember being a freshman, wide open, man, just wide open. That's a year. That's a big year for growth. You got a 14-year-old son, Bo. You got a 17-year-old girl, Lexi, and then a 12-year-old young girl by the name of Hadley, and you have your wife, Lacey. And so I know everybody. I hope everybody likes to talk about their family. I'm interested, you know, in it. I'd like to hear, you know, maybe if you don't mind, let's talk about Bo first, and I'll let you take it from there. But I could just see Bo and his buddies there, and I just had a grin on my face looking at him when we were tailgating. You know, he showed up, and then of course after the game, and I just thought to myself, man, I could see there's a monster connection between you two.
Yeah, Bo is, he's I could really tell you some stories here recently, because he's you know, we got a phone call over the summer. Me and Bo was actually on the golf course together, and we don't ever get to spend time, me and him, unless it's going to a ball field or practice or something. Mm-hmm. I've got Lexi, right, who is very into travel softball. You know, you listeners that do any kind of club or travel stuff, they know what I'm talking about. So it was her.
Then huge Bo, commitment. Then, yeah.
Yeah. And then Hallie Jane, she does stuff too. So me and Bo don't get to spend a whole lot of time together. We was actually on the golf course July 4th week. We're shut down. We're on vacation. We were just me and him. We went and played golf before we went to a travel ball tournament. I think it was somewhere in Florida with him. And we're sitting there, and the high school football coach calls me when I'm there. And he's, I said, well, I'm whooping one of your players' butt, whooping Bo's butt in golf right now. He goes, good. I'm glad you're with Bo, because he's going to be our starting quarterback on varsity this year. I said, cool. Oh, boy. You know, 14-year-old freshman. He said, but, wow, you know, he's got to realize now he's going to become the leader. Well, okay, so leadership's out of my alley. You know, here we go, you know. So, but I'm talking to him. We're playing a little golf course. Bo's over there looking at me, and got the phone, and, you know, he wants to be more vocal, you know, this and that. And that's really hard for a 14-year-old, fixing to be with 18-year-olds. You know, it's starting center, mm-hmm, is an 18-year-old, you know, 6'2", 280-pound starting center. You know, starting running back, 6'1", 215. And here he is, about 6'1", 6'2", 150 pounds, soaking wet. Just now got three armpit hairs under his left armpit. You know, he's still baby face.
Right.
And so we had to talk about leadership. You know, all right, buddy, you know, this is what you're going to have to do. You know, you're going to have to be more vocal. You know, you are the quarterback. You know, hey, you know, leadership's not anointed. You know, I tell people that all the time. You can get put in leadership positions, but now, are you going to be the leader or not? Because they're going to follow you, or they ain't. You know, just because you get put in a position to be a leader don't mean you're a leader.
That's right.
You know, so how am I going to explain to him? Say, okay, now, you know, here we go. So the rest of the time we're playing golf, we're talking about leadership, what to do, you know. Hey, Bo, you know, first of all, you got to earn their respect. You know, you got to earn your offensive lineman respect. You got to earn your wideouts, your running back. You know, they're all going to be looking to you. You know, getting that huddle, they're looking at you, buddy. You know, so I don't know if you're ready for that. Of course, cocky as he is, he's like, oh, I got it. No, you don't. You know, it's going to be hard, but, you know, it's going to be, you're going to hit some adversity. And, you know, and I'm proud of him. He's you know, we're 6-2 right now in the high school football, and 5A. We play 5A high school football here, which is a pretty big classification.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a great job. You can see the growth every game. You know, you can see him over there, you know, with his offensive lineman patting him on the butt. You know, he's actually starting to get on to him a little bit now. They fall start, you know, he's right there. Mm-hmm. You know, you see him talking to him, slapping him on the butt, mm-hmm, you know, telling him, you know, let's go. And he's kind of taking control, and he's learning how to be a leader. And that's more important to me than, you know, the touchdowns, this, you know, hey, your son's 14, you know, people come up to me, you know, hey, he's 14. I can't believe he's 14. I can't believe he's freshman doing it. That watching him become a leader and be a leader of men, even though they're not men yet now, but watching him take them steps is probably more, I'm more proud of that than I am anything else. Of course, funny thing about Bo, it comes with it. So now he's QB1 of this high school. Now you got these 16-year-old girls wanting to come by the house and pick him up, and his mama's back there about to have a conniption fit. So now I'm dealing with that on the side. Like, all right, Bo, come here now. We got to talk about this too. Now we're speeding up the process a lot right here just because of all this. And
right.
So it's been real entertaining in my house with Bo right now. It's Mama's about to have, she's about to pull her hair out because of these girls and stuff, and he just grins and there he goes out the door.
It's better than taking a bus.
Yeah, man, it's something that. It's good, man. He's good. He's learning a lot. He's got a chance one day if he works hard, if he wants it. It's up to him. I tell all my kids that.
As a freshman, though, I mean, let me put an exclamation mark behind that, man. There was in my high school, okay, and we had a guy. I was a senior. He was a sophomore. They moved him up to varsity, and he went on to play at the University of Wisconsin. Now, the rest of them, to my knowledge, now some of them, and it's been a long time ago. That was a long time ago. But my point is this: there was zero until my senior year. There was zero sophomores on any of the varsity teams. We had a freshman JV and a varsity team for juniors and seniors, and I know of zero. Okay, in my 4 years, I can tell you there were zero freshmen moved up to play varsity. The difference between, a freshman and a junior or a senior, and just in terms of their size, their maturity, that's just unheard of. And yet your son Bo's the starting quarterback. That's got you. That feeling that you have just must be. It's got to be great. I imagine every day you wake up and your buttons are popping on your shirt. It's got to be, right? I mean, that's pretty incredible. That's a lot. How do you learn to throw the football like that?
Yeah, it just wasn't a natural. I don't know. I put it in his hands at a very young age because I realized what it took. Hey, if you want to go play football one day, buddy, you're either going to have to be 6'6", 6'8", big old joker, and I just married your mama here. She's about 5'6", 5'5", and about a buck 05. So it's not going to be in your genetics to be 6'6", 6'8". So, but you're going to be taller than me. You're going to be up there. And hey, and the thing about quarterback is, sports in general is great. I mean, we get guys coming in here on their resume. I want to know if you played a sport in high school. It teaches them a lot, adversity at a young age, how do you respond to it? That's the thing with Bo right now. It ain't about his ability to throw the football. He can throw it. He can do it. All right. How are you handling this? When you throw that interception, I want to see your body language. How are you on the sideline? How are you? It's easy to do it when stuff are going good. Now, how are you reacting to it when it's going bad? And that's what we talk about. And it kills me being up in the stands on Friday nights. I'm watching it. I want to be down there with him, but, you got to let baby boy go. And
that's right.
He's done a good job. He's done a real good job at that. That's what, like I said, I'm more proud of that than anything. So he's learning about life a whole lot early. And so it's been fun. And then Lexi, my 17-year-old, she's been through a lot. She was a big time softball player. She's had two hip surgeries already. She's kind of put her dreams on hold a little bit. She is committed to go play college softball, but right now she's just trying to get healthy, and her body's kind of shutting down on her a little bit. So we had to talk about life a lot. Say, hey, softball don't define Lexi Bennett. That's not who you are. You're Lexi Bennett, you play softball, And the growth in her and doing all that has been like, if there was a kid that was going to come run Capco Bills one day, it'd be Lexi. I love Bo to death, but Lexi is she's something else now. She's going to be a special, she might be valid. I think she's going to be valedictorian. She just got homecoming queen 2 weeks ago.
There you go.
She does really good. I really brag on her. And then of course Hallie Jane's the boss now. She's 12 years old. She tells me what to do. The other two got
Hallie Jane.
Something. The other two got their butts whooped for looking wrong. And Hallie Jane, I don't know if I've ever, I don't think I've ever went to with a belt. I might have got her with my hand, but somebody had to take care of daddy when I get old. And that's gonna be her. She's the baby. The other two, No, they'll put me out of pasture. But Hallie Jane, now she's going to, that's daddy's little girl. So she does no wrong. Sweet, the other two can't do right. Hallie Jane don't do no wrong. So she knows it. So it's a lot of fun in our house, I promise.
Oh, that's great, Kyle. I appreciate you sharing that with us. I think it just, when I was looking at your family there when we were together, I just thought, wow, that's, that is a tight-knit group, and that's the way it should be, and I could also tell that you had some of your employees there too, as we were tailgating before and after the game. And it was very clear to me that the people that are working for you and your it's one big tight group, but often you don't get to see how employees interact with their boss in a social setting. But it was very clear to me that everybody there has a great deal of respect for you, and like you said, I don't care what position you're in. Somebody puts you in a position, same thing in the military. You might have the rank, right? You might be a captain, you might be a colonel, you might be a general, et cetera, or a sergeant major. But if people don't respect you, they respect the rank in the military because they have to, but they don't have to respect the person. And that's the difference, right? It's like, you don't have to respect, they might respect you as the general manager, but they don't have to respect you, as the individual, Kyle Bennett, but they do, and it was evident to me that there was a lot of respect and a lot of love in that, under that tent there. And it was genuine, and it just struck me. And that's leadership, right? You can't, money can't buy that. That's earned. All that stuff is earned. And I appreciate you sharing the stories about Bo, but hey, everything's great. When everything's great, we can talk about it being great. There's time for celebration there a little bit. You can pat yourself on the back a little bit. That's good, right? But how you act and how you behave, and when things aren't going good, right? It's all about what you do in adversity that really counts. When the chips are down, that's when you find out what kind of metal people have, right? It's hard to prepare people for that until they've been in it. But doing that as a dad, that coaching, teaching, mentoring, that's some pretty powerful stuff. And like you say, we only get like snapshots. Everybody's so busy today. You got business, you got family, you got all this community stuff going on. And that one or two times, those teachable, coachable moments, and you want to, and you're choosing to spend some time talking about leadership, and what do we do when the chips are down, and how do you interact with people? And, leadership is the art of providing purpose, direction, and motivation, right? That's it. And there ain't no science about it. I suppose you could split some atoms in there, but at the end of the day, there's an art to that, and I want to talk to you. I want to shift gears. I wasn't prepared to talk about this. We got a few minutes here, but I wanted to mention this because I'm doing this program with our heroes, and Matt's going to be he's actually the first guy going through this program. He's going to be with one of his running buds too, Jake Whipke. But we're doing this leadership development training, right? And I thought to myself, here's the setup. I've been doing this job serving combat wounded guys for 19, coming up on 20 years with the foundation. And I love it. I still got a ton of gas in my tank. But I'm thinking, hey, in 10 more years, I'm thinking long term, I'm done in 10 years. Like I want to start building my exit strategy now and start finding, leaders within the organization like Matt and like Jake and many others, that I want to, groom, for lack of a better term, and spend some more time with, so that they can, learn more about the organization, learn more about me, we can build more trust and bond together and these kinds of things, right? And I got a whole program of instruction that we're going to do and things like this, right? But the most important thing, and I wanted to ask you about this because I asked a lot of leaders, I didn't ask you about this, but before I built this program, which we're going to execute in December, start executing in December, but it's a leadership development program. But I thought back on the leaders in my life, And I want you just a moment to just begin to kind of think about the leaders, impactful leaders in your life. And it may be a dad, it may be an uncle, maybe a coach, maybe a friend. It just, the leaders take many, many forms, you know, as we know. But I got to thinking about it from the military perspective, because I had a lot of leaders in 20 years of wearing a uniform, and most of them were really, really good. Some were great, some weren't so good, you know? So I always thought maybe I'd take a little of this and a little of that, you know, from each person that I met. And when, especially when you found one you didn't like, and they did things, you know, that you didn't respect, or you just said to yourself, you know what, I'm not going to be like that. Like, that's important too. That's a great lesson. Like, I'm never going to do that. I know how that felt. I saw what he did. We felt the impact of that decision or that action, and I'm never going to do that. And that's a super important lesson, like when you're talking about leadership. But what I want to get your opinion on here, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, man. I really don't, because this is, there's no right answer. I'm just curious, because I was looking at the guys, the men that I looked at and wanted to emulate, meaning I wanted to be like that guy. Like, I thought, look at that guy, man. I want to be more like that guy. And I would say, well, how often did I really get to see that guy? And what did I really know about him? And the answer was, you know, I might not even got to see that guy or interact with him a whole lot because of his position. He was maybe two or three levels above me. And I was a lieutenant, and I couldn't just go up to the colonel and go, hey, sir, tell me about leadership. You know, that just doesn't happen, right? So I spent a lot of time observing these men and watching their behavior in groups. And I just thought, you know, what is it? It's like the French would say, the je ne sais quoi, that I don't know what that is, but I just know that I want to be like that guy, or more like that guy, or less like that guy. And I wanted to throw that out at you. You know, when you look at some of your mentors, you know, the leaders, people that you emulate and admire and wanted to be like, you know, what was it?
Yeah, it is, and like you said, it's different. You take snapshots from over here, like your high school football coach. You know how he,
right.
You know how he was. You know how he, you felt the love. You know, you get to college, and you know, big leader of mine was our strength coach. He spent a lot of time with us. Loved that guy. You know, just he genuinely loved. You know, the your position coach was scared to death. He was going to get him and his family fired, and he was going to have to move. You know, so. But you saw how they led, you know, your right. Position coach led from fear. And there's, you know, leading from fear can be a great thing, but it's also can be very detrimental.
Yeah.
You know, the fear of failure, you know, I talk about it all the time. You can't be scared to fail. If you're leading out of fear, you're never going to make it, you know? And so I kind of saw that, you know, and I get there, then, you know, I get in this business. And of course I start off working in the plant. You know, here I am. I was academic all SEC. I played football for University of Alabama. You know, I come home. I'm supposed to go to law school. I told my dad, I was like, look, you know, you got Capco up going. This law school, I was accepted into law school. I said, you know, this ain't for me. You know, I'm hanging out with these lawyers doing this intern. They're drinking martinis and wearing suits. There I am wanting to get a dip of Copenhagen and have a, you know, have a cold beer. And we're not going to work, you know. You know, so I wanted to come back, get in there. Well, I started working in the plant, you know, and I worked my way up. I started in the back. I started in the frame shop, welding, building frames. And, you know, when I got to learn that, of course, my dad would give me a little test like, hey, this, and this. If I verbally got 100, answered all of his questions, I got to move to the next station. And a lot of these supervisors I got in there now, I work with, you know, two belt on. Hey, let's go. You know, I'm lagging floors. I'm rolling glue on floor joists. I'm toting deck, and it's you know, I'm doing the plumbing. You know, it's. But I also had it in my mind, hey, okay, this is what I want to do. I'm going to run this thing one day. I'm going to get in here. I'm going to work with them, and that's why I can walk out in the plant right now, and they know it. You know, they know I was in there with them. I was in the trenches with them. Know what they're going through. But you know, my dad was my guy. You know, why is he jumping on my butt right now? When we hit roll times, we're producing great houses, but the roll up door in the metal shop's got a couple pieces of trash outside of it. It's not trash. Why is he, you know, what? I'm doing this, and this. Why is he on harping on this? You know, well, and it took me a minute to find out. Okay, that's fine and dandy. Okay, everything's going good. You better be hunting something wrong. And so, you know, if your area is clean, they're going to build you a great house. If your area is dirty, hey, you're making it acceptable for them to work in a dirty area because they won't sweep after their road time. Guess what? They're going to take a shortcut on that VTR mm-hmm. that they're pulling up through the roof, and they ain't going to foam it like they're supposed to. And, you know, that kind of stuff is just like, I never would have thought, you know, until he was on me. You know, he stayed on me pretty hard. You know, when I got mm-hmm. when I started general manager, it was just like, dude, you can have this. I'll go back to selling and working in the plant here. You know what I'm saying? But then that was my mentality at that age. Like, all right. So, but me, that didn't leave me for long because I was going to be better than him. You know, so that was kind of my driving force. Okay, everybody talks about this Keith Bennett's in the mobile home industry. I'm going to be better than my granddad. I'm going to be better than my dad. You know, so I was always chasing the ghost, you know, chasing the legend. You know, people always come up, you know, your dad's a legend. You know, well, you're going to say that crap out. You know, always wanted to be better than him. That's what kind of drove me. But he's always taught me, he goes, you know, the biggest thing is, Kyle, you're only as good as your people. I don't give a crap how good you think you are. You're only as good as your people. And there's management for a reason. People are going to, the human nature is just do enough to get by.
Right.
That's why you have management. That's why you've got supervisors. That's why you've got to lead them. You know, you got to be out there. You know, you got to lead them. Same thing like you talk about the military. There's a reason why you've got lieutenants. You know, the reason mm-hmm. why you got colonels and you got people under them. Well, okay. Same thing here, because human nature is now they're going to do it just enough to get by. Upper management's got to. Management and supervisors and everybody you put, your lieutenants, which I got 12 of them out there. They're my supervisors. You know, there's a standard, you know. And like I said, Keith taught me that, and I still believe it. You know, I see something wrong, I don't go to the guy that did it. I go to that supervisor.
Right.
He gets up there with the guy, but the supervisor is the one that me and him was having a little talk about it, you know, and mm-hmm. sometimes them talks can be good or bad compared to what the supervisor's attitude is when I get him up there to talk about it. But so, and getting them to where they can lead. And I've seen many of guys that wanted the money, wanted the leadership, wanted to be the supervisor. But when they got it, it wasn't 2 weeks. They was in my office like, here, take this radio back. I can't do it. You know, okay, mm-hmm. why can't you? All right, listen. You know, because I'm going to put you out there. I'm not going to hire nobody under you to help babysit you. You know, this is what you want. You're going to get it. But now you got to perform. All right, now let's work the problem. And this, mm-hmm. don't tell how many supervisors I've had that once we sat down and said, okay, you're drowning, buddy. It's okay to ask for help. All right, now let's work the problem. And all of a sudden, they've worked it out. Now they're one of the best supervisors I got, you know, 5 years down the road.
Yeah, that's development, right? That's leadership development.
That's what it is. You can't give up on, you know, you're going to.
That's right. Everybody don't give up on them. Don't give up on them.
You can't. And I say it this time. We get kids in here that don't know how to read a tape measure because their daddy's never taught. You know, guys, we can't throw them out of the woods. Don't give up on them.
Right.
Are we taking our time to train them? Don't give up on them. And then, you know, there'll come a time to where, okay, they're just not going to get it because their attitude or their work ethic thing there. If you get a work ethic and your attitude, right, there's two things in life that, you don't have to have a skill. Attitude, work it.
That's right. You either have that or you don't. That's right. It's hard to train that. It's hard to train. You can't because they show up with that. That's something inside of you. You either got a good attitude or you don't have a good attitude. You either have a good work ethic or you do not. Yeah. You might have learned that by watching or, you know, your parents or, you know, it may have rubbed off on you. But that's the one thing you can't train. You can't, you know, if somebody has a bad attitude, it's a bad attitude, man. Mm-hmm. It's hard to turn that ship. Usually that's what I found anyway.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, wow. That's good stuff, man. I appreciate you sharing that with me. You know, I always like to give my guest, the last, you know, I say the whack at the pinata. I'll say one more thing and then I'll turn it over to you. But I wanted to mention it because when we were at the football game in Tuscaloosa, I was a little nervous cause I was way outgunned, you know, here's a Wisconsin boy in the midst of all this, you know, greatness and nostalgia and winning. Not that Wisconsin doesn't have a, you know, some history with winning, It's just, I was vastly outnumbered. And you know, of course, you know, the support you'd given the foundation, you and your family had given the foundation. And I was like, I was slightly intimidated, and that doesn't happen every day. So I was like, you know, kind of being quiet and just kind of scoping everything out and enjoying the whole thing. And Matt says to me, you see what he's got on his wrist there talking about you. And I looked and I'm like, I saw the purple bracelet, you know, and I know that bracelet, that rubber bracelets, you know, cost about 15 cents for us to manage. It says Wounded Warriors in Action, you know, on it. And I was like, wow. He goes, ever since I gave him that, he goes, he ain't took it off. And I'm like, wow. I mean, I just like that. That's just so cool. I see you're wearing it now, and I can see you on the TV here, you know, or on the computer. But I appreciate it, man. I just wanted to say thank you again for all that you and your team and your family's done for our combat wounded veterans. You know, it's been a real game changer for us. You're a heck of a leader and a wonderful person. And I'll give you the last whack at the pinata here, buddy.
Well, it was very easy for me to build that house because of the hunt we did before Matt asked. You know, I was very skeptical. I was like, yeah, man, we'll take them hunting. You know, yeah, we'll do it. But seeing them, you know, them heroes get there and then listening to their stories, and then I got to spend a lot of time, because you get to spend a lot of time with them one-on-one.
That's and, right.
Man, anything, you know, and I tell my kids this, and you know, anything we're going through in life or whatever, you know, listening to their stories and what they've been through, you know, it's real easy for me. If I'm in a position to help, you know, to give back, and that's something that's very important to me now. I ain't saying it wasn't important then, but once I got involved and we had that hunt, it's a no-brainer. To see how they get there, mm-hmm. and what their attitude is when they leave, and that's what I tell Matt. I said, Matt, I said, you know, I'm kind of like you. You know, I'm going to sit back and watch. For, mm-hmm. You know, I'm going. And that first time we had it, you know, I observed, you know, I saw the four heroes we had in there to hunt. When they first got there, they, you know, hey, man, you know, they don't know nobody.
That's
you know,
right.
And you're wondering, you know, about them. And then all of a sudden you start, here comes the smiles, here comes the laughter, here comes mm-hmm. the story times, here comes the smile on their, you know, the mm-hmm. beaming. And then the proudness they had to go serve. And you know, they're all, you know, Purple Hearts. You know, they've all been, you know, injured in combat. And the pride they still got to have served is what it's all about. You know, and I'm like, man, this is great. This is what y'all are doing. It's awesome. I'm in. You know, you want to have a hunt every year, whatever I can do. You know, of course, the house thing kind of snuck up on me. I was like, you know what? We'll make that happen. You know, we're good. Yeah, you know. And business was good then, you know. But yeah, I regret it anyways. You know, that ain't about what business was. But
All right.
So it's a great thing y'all are doing, man, and I value your friendship. I value Matt's friendship, and anything we can ever do to help, man, we're here. You know, I'm a phone call away, always.
God bless you, my friend. It's an honor to spend some time with you, and I know you're a busy man, and I appreciate you taking a little time out of your busy schedule to share some of your leadership tips and you know, about your life and your lifestyle and your family. It means a lot to us, and I appreciate it, and I wish you guys all the best. I'm going to say it because I'll tell you, we did have an Alabama event long before, you know, we ever met, and we were turkey hunting. And the gentleman that ran, whose land it was, is now passed. And so the event went with him. But I learned a long time ago when I was in Alabama watching people and being quiet about it, I realized that sometimes when you don't know what to say, all you have to say in Alabama is Roll Tide. And if you say it like that, kind of draw it out like you guys say it. Even though I'm from Wisconsin, I'm a Yankee, and I could slap some Northwoods on you so quick, make your head spin. But if you say it like that, things just get a lot better. And then
anytime you're in a situation in Alabama, you just blurt out them two words, and you're gonna be all right.
That's right. You're gonna instantly make friends, and they're gonna like it. And so that's kind of what that kind of every time I say it, I just have this little grin inside of me. You also talked to, you know, when you were talking on leadership on standards, you know, you said the word, but, you know, that's really, you know, what it's about. It is about standards of conduct, standards of behavior, standards of, you know, how you build in this thing, you know, how do you behave? You know, standards are a big part of our lives, and you know, people that have high standards, and uphold high standards, generally very successful people. And I know that you come from a long line of that. And I'm sure you and your daddy was out there looking at the things sitting next to the dumpster. That's what he had in his mind, was standards. Right. And so that's all good stuff. I wish you the best throughout the remainder of the year and all the years to come. I look forward to someday being seeing you up at Camp Hackett. We would love to engineer some success there and get you up firsthand, you know, with the heroes up there. Now it's going to be cold, so I'm going to tell you right now, it'll be the fall up there. But I reckon you'll be just fine. But
I'll tell you now. Y'all won't know if I'm cold.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure of that. But anyway, God bless you and thank you, Kyle. I appreciate you spending the time with us, and I hope to see you real soon.
You too, bro. Anytime.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, bud.
Thank you for listening to the WWIA podcast. To learn more about the Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation and how you can get involved, please visit our website at wwiaf.org or follow us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. If you'd like to comment or offer feedback about our podcast, or if you have a suggestion for a future episode, please email us at podcast@wwiaf.org. Thank you for your support and for helping us honor, connect, and heal our combat wounded Purple Heart heroes through the power of the great outdoors.